Hey everybody, this is Dan Dunn, and on this episode of What We're Drinking, I chat with Alex Ebert, the lead singer of Edward Sharpe and the Magnetic Zeros. Really one of my favorite interviews that I've done in a long time. Alex is a fascinating guy, and I think you're really going to enjoy this. Also on this episode, I speak with Rob Dietrich. Rob is a master distiller. He is the master distiller for Blackened. Blackened is a whiskey started by Metallica and another master distiller named Dave Pickerel. Dave passed away, sadly, last year, and Rob has stepped in to try and continue Dave's legacy. And so far, he's doing a great job. I think you're going to enjoy that interview as well. Thank you for being here with us, and let's get to it.
Well, pour yourself a glass, sit for a spill. It's time to have some fun. Let's do a little thinking, some picking and a drinking. Well, this is what we're drinking with Dan Dunn. Oh, yeah.
So, when I was a kid, I grew up in Philadelphia, and I didn't have any money. We had no money growing up, and treats were few and far between. But one of the treats when I was a child was my grandmother, who was really, really old when I was a kid, and she's gone now. But every year, she would take me to John Wanamaker's, and John Wanamaker's is a department store, and was a department store in Philadelphia, and they would do a Christmas show every year, and this was the treat. Because we would go down and they had a guy that was sort of the master of ceremonies at the Christmas show. And he was, to me, the most amazing person. He used to wear these really garish costumes, and he would come out and he would just orchestrate this whole extravaganza. And a lot of the time when I would go, and I was a little kid, I was like 6 or 7 years old, and I would look at this guy and I would think, he's talking to me, right? Like, I got it. This guy is telling, and like I would leave there thinking, everything's going to be all right. And so then one year, I went to the John Wanamaker's Christmas show, and my grandmother surprised me and said that after a John Wanamaker's, we were going to go see Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, the movie, Gene Wilder, and we went to see that. And that was probably the best day I remember.
That sounds like
when
a
I was
day.
A kid, I went. I remember walking out of there thinking, "This is happiness. This was what happiness feels like." So I bring this up because I just witnessed a set of music here at Bourbon and Beyond by Edward Sharpe and the Magnetic Zeros, and I don't know exactly why, but it made when I was sitting there, I teared up a little. Tearing up a little bit now. Hold on. All right, there we go. I teared up a little bit when I was watching the show because I thought, Jesus, man, like, this is what happiness feels like. Again, much older now. And so I am really happy about that. And I'm also happy to have the guy sitting in front of me right now who made that happen, Alex Ebert of Edward Sharpe and the Magnetic Zeros. And thanks for joining me, man.
Oh, my God, what a story. That's so overwhelming to hear, man. That's so beautiful.
Well,
it's cool as hell, you know. It's like, I think about, that's all I ever wanted, you know, as an artist. It's like, why do you want to do this, you know? And that's the only thing, is like having a positive impact. And it sounds so fucking cliche or trite, but to hear a story like that is, you know, it sounds like a cliche, but it makes the whole thing so much more than worth it.
But it's not.
I can die a happy person now.
But it's not. It's not. It's not a cliche. Because, and trust me, man, I'm the most cynical motherfucker there is. Right.
Right.
But every once in a while, there's like a crack in the armor, and this thing seems. And it just happened here in Louisville, especially when Alex went out into the audience. Well, the first moment that I really was when you faded into Instant Karma by John Lennon, and the whole crowd was singing, you know, We All Shine On, and I started going. And then when you went out into the crowd and you asked some people to share stories with you, And at that was the moment when I just started tearing up, and I thought, it reminded me of that guy. I don't know who the hell he was, the guy that used to run the John Wanamaker thing, because he was just there to make everybody feel good, but more than just, like, anybody can get up on stage. I always felt like he was talking to me, and I felt like that's what it was with you, and I think a lot of the people in the crowd probably felt the same way, so... Thanks again, man. Like, that's isn't that what it's about? Isn't that what performance is about?
It's connectivity, man. Connecting.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's everything. Yeah.
So, man, you're here. You just finished the set, and you're from Los Angeles. You're from Los Angeles, live in New Orleans. Now, I live it out in L.A. I'm from Philly originally. What is it like for you coming? Like, do you play a lot in this part of the country, in the middle of the country, in the South, and that sort of thing?
Well, we don't play a lot much at all lately. The last three and a half years, we've kind of been... laying low, but no, we don't get to come out here that much. You know, it's really nice to be sort of in a place where the music sort of is the music is leading. It's not style or fashion or sort of culture that's leading, but the music is leading, and that's kind of refreshing, you know.
Yeah, and I think that's this festival in particular. They're not. It's just it keeps going, and they have such an amazing lineup. In fact, while we're sitting here talking right now, I'm looking in the back. There's Leon Bridges is on stage, and that's going to be followed by ZZ
great.
Top, and that's
going. Yeah.
And they're not playing around here. You've taken a couple of years off from touring. Do you miss it? Do you miss being on the road?
Yeah, I miss it. Yeah, yeah.
I just haven't seen a stage presence like you are. Like, when you're up there, you kept talking about, like, let's pretend like we're in the living room.
Right.
And that was, but I mean, it doesn't come off, it's not, right? It doesn't come off as affected or anything. I'm like, you just seem to be so simpatico with the audience at that point where.
Yeah, I probably should keep playing live because that happens. And how can you turn your back on something like that? The thing of it is the sleeping in a tin can 6 months out of the year, like in these tiny little things and just not being able to move. And in Europe, the buses aren't even tall enough where I can stand up straight. And I love it. But like, and then you waste your whole day, like sort of like squatting in a tube of metal. And then you go out on stage and you have an amazing time. But it gets grueling, you know, like, I sound like. I'm extraordinarily, unbelievably grateful, but anything in enough repetition can get like, you know, like,
sure.
Oh my God. Yeah. And the other thing is like, I love writing songs, and I don't get to write as many songs as I want to when I'm just touring all the time. That said, yeah, like we've been playing shows and they're so, everything you've just been telling me has been gnawing at me in that I can't really turn my back on this because of that connection thing you're talking about. And if someone, you know, when you find out what your superpower is on Earth, because we all have one, it's hard to walk away from that, you know. And so, yeah, I'll be back around.
And the engagement, like the other thing that really impressed me was, and I don't even feel like everybody picked up on it, but at one point you were singing and you were pointing out people in the crowd and what they were doing at that exact moment that they were doing it, and yet. Integrating that seamlessly into the rhythm of the music, and I was super impressed, man. I was like, and I'd read something somewhere that said back in the day you wanted to be a rapper, and that's that talent. Like, that's the thing that's always impressed me about rappers, when a guy look at something and go, all right, I have this rhythm in me, and whatever's happening, whatever sensory input I'm getting,
yeah.
I can just fold that into my music. And you were doing that the whole show, and it was really impressive.
Chop it up and put it in the soup. Yep.
Yeah, it was incredible. It was really incredible, man. So you relocated to New Orleans about 8 years ago, you said?
Yeah.
What brought that? It was just like a...
Having a kid, and my baby mama. You know, there's no word in English for that.
There's no word for me.
Not really. So my girlfriend, who I was pregnant with, see, that's not technically... I wasn't pregnant.
You were never pregnant.
She was pregnant. Anyway. she didn't want to raise a kid in L.A. And I was like, fair enough. There's a place that's like my favorite place on Earth. Let's try it out. New Orleans reminds me of the island in Pinocchio when the kids get sent and they become donkeys. It's like... it's total permission to be yourself, to like... I don't know, I feel in very special places only once in a while where like I actually feel like I have permission to just sort of live. without a whole bunch of like externality, sort of like hipster pressure or commodity pressure or anything like that. Like, people live down there like really lax, you know.
Yeah.
There's no like ladder climbing and, you know, all that kind of
shit that you get in LA.
Fronting, yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, it's funny because so you grew up in LA, I grew up in Philly. So when I got to LA, there was this magical quality of like, what the fuck is going on here, man? Like, I remember my exposure to LA would have been like rap videos when I was a kid in Philly. And then, you know, like, I remember the movie Colors. Remember that movie with Robert Duvall and Sean? I was like, oh man, LA is like, that's a badass place. I got to go there someday. And I've been there now. I've been there 19 years.
It's amazing. I mean, LA is special, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. But what do you think about it now?
Well, I've been there 19 years.
Are
and
you
I'm
ready
in,
to leave?
Well, or? I'm in Venice, right? So it's
yeah,
like,
it's
I remember.
Nice there.
I remember being in Venice and thinking, I'm in Venice. Like, this is Venice. And now I'm like, I'm in fucking Venice. Like, how many more square fucking mansions can you put up? Like, it's changing and everything changes.
Oh, my God, yeah.
But New Orleans doesn't ever seem to change that way.
No, it's gentrifying a little bit, but it's tolerable so far. And also, there's sort of a limit to the amount of gentrification because there's not a lot of industry there other than the service industry, and then you had a little film, and then you have like your basic retail stuff. So there's no like, you know, hidden bank over there that people can like access and start throwing man. Like, Venice is crazy, you know. I mean, it's weird to see to see culture get counterculture be, you know, turn into culture. But that's what happens. I have this place in Detroit where I'm trying this experiment because where you buy up a whole bunch of like a couple blocks, and in Detroit it was extremely cheap. It was $100 $1 per square foot. And then if the place next door was empty, it was $200. And we bought them all up like with this amazing woman named Shu, who already was living on one of the lots. And in her, with her vision sort of leading the whole thing, we bought up these three blocks, and then we put them into a trust so that people can live there and whatnot. But like, it can never be, those blocks can never just sell and turn into like mansions, and all of a sudden, so whatever we're growing there, the culture we're growing there, we'll be able to stay, and then you have the mansions around. A couple mansions aren't so bad, you know.
No. But when it's all mansions, it's like,
yeah.
I'm in Venice and I'm going, and there's also that sort of sense of, and I'm sure you had this, every neighborhood in LA has gone through this, from Silver Lake to Echo Park, where you're kind of like, hey, motherfucker, the reason you're coming here is because we made it cool.
Exactly.
And now
we
got to
go.
And why do we got to go? But, yeah. You know, that's the history of, that's the history of punk rock. When you were just saying a second ago, I was thinking about the White Man in Hammersmith Palais by The Clash. And there's that line, you know, if Adolf Hitler flew in today, he'd send a limousine. Like, it's like everything gets co-opted. Everything gets like, you know, it becomes a commodity.
Yeah.
But I think the righteous people, the cool people, they find a fucking way, they find another place. And so 20 years from now, people will be talking about how, you know, Lawrence, Kansas is the coolest place or something
right.
like that. Yeah, you know,
right.
So, or Detroit.
Yeah, it moves.
It moves.
It survives.
So what are you up to after you split here?
I go back to New Orleans. I'm working on a double solo album. I'm doing pulling a George Harrison, I guess.
Yeah.
And working to finish that. That'll be out in a couple months. And then, you know, at some point I'd like to get this band together in my studio in New Orleans and make another fucking album, you know. And make one, and then another, and then another. And really churn them out and focus a little less on touring. Like, the thing about the album cycle that, like, is so difficult is that, you know, first of all, the album format, the 9 songs, the 10 songs, that's because that's how much could fit on a piece of vinyl. So that's why that's why an album's an album. And then touring it, you know, the whole idea of touring one album for 3 years is just like, Bob Dylan put out four incredible albums in 1 year, in like whenever that was, Blonde on Blonde and da da da, and Blood on the Track, whatever that shit was. Anyway, I want to do more of that, and then play. When we came up, what I wanted to do was never play a legitimate space. Like, this would be fine, but I wouldn't want to play like theaters and whatnot. I want to play people's backyards, train yards, parking lots. I want to have a bus where the stage pops off the roof and sits on the side, and you pull up next to the homeless and play downtown or whatever. Just non-traditional. I fell right into the traditional thing, and it didn't end for 7 years. So I'd like to get back some of that like DIY energy.
That's the thing. We talked about it earlier. We just witnessed it there. You when you went into the crowd, first of all, not, people describe it as, it's not fearless, no one's going to fucking hurt you here, right? But when you went in the crowd, like, you seemed perfectly at ease, and that's not the case, I would guess, with 95% of lead singers in big bands.
Right.
Like, to walk out there and be in front of the, be in the audience, grab a smoke from somebody, right. You know, go up to say, give a hug, I get one girl.
Well, you know what the thing is, sorry, whoops.
Oh, yeah,
you know
I
what
know.
The thing is? It's that it's unbearable to be anything but free on stage. When you're on stage, it's so much pressure that unless you just let it all go, you're just going to have a terrible time, you know? So it's almost like this amazing crucible where you just have to pick a lane, you know? And the lane to choose is free.
I just want to say, let's have a quick shot and then we'll get out of here. Alex, I want to say, man, again, you know, thank you for transporting me back to my childhood, which was really nice, man. You know, it's rare that you get a moment when you go, that is pure joy. That is something truly authentic. That is something meaningful that I'm not going to forget anytime soon. And I want to thank you for it, man. And cheers, brother. That's Alex Ebert, Edward Sharp, and the Magnetic Zeros. Thanks for joining me, man.
Thank you so much, man. That was me.
That's my whistling. And that was Alex Ebert, and I gotta tell you, that was great. Really enjoyed it, and I hope you did too. So now, I want to tell you a little story before we get to our next interview, or as a sort of a prelude to our next interview. September 2005, the lobby bar at the Viceroy Hotel in Santa Monica, California is, as usual, teeming with the fancy folk. Among them are Tim Farris and J.D. Fortune. Farris is the lead singer and founding member of INXS, the best-selling rock band Australia's ever produced. Fortune is a fresh-faced singer from Canada, fresh off winning a reality TV competition to replace the late Michael Hutchence as INXS's frontman. We've been at the bar a good while and thus rightly lubricated. Fortune confides in me that he was living in his car under a bridge somewhere when he was chosen to be a contestant on CBS's rock star INXS. Out of sympathy, I offer to buy a round of drinks, but he's not having it. Waves me off with a wink and a shiny new credit card in hand. Everything's changed now, he grins. Everything. A few years later, the band fired him. Yeah. Have a little whiskey. I can't help but think of J.D. Fortune while on my way to meet with Rob Dietrich in Denver. Dietrich, you see, is a whiskey maker and a damn good one at that. And this past June, he was tapped by Metallica to be the master distiller of their Blackened American whiskey brand, a position previously occupied by spirits industry legend Dave Pickerel, who passed away in November of 2018. To be clear, unlike Fortune when he landed the INXS gig, Dietrich is no stranger to the spotlight, insofar as it relates to the spirits industry. Before taking the Blackened job, he spent 13 years at Stranahan's, more than half of it as the top dog, helping to turn Colorado's first micro distillery into one of America's leading purveyors of premium craft whiskey. As for handling pressure, Dietrich did two tours in war-torn Somalia with the U.S. Army's 10th Mountain Division. Remember Black Hawk Down? He was there when that almighty hell went down. There's little danger of his being crushed by the weight of his new responsibility. Still, Dave Pickerel. Blackened was his baby, his recipe. Fair or not, just as INXS fans expected Fortune to blend falsetto with full baritone as seamlessly as Hutchence did on tracks like Disappear, Dietrich knows he has to make that damn whiskey sing, just like Pickerel did. He told me he's not trying to replace Dave because that's not possible. We were drinking in a bar called Fort Greene in the Globeville section of Denver when he told me that. He just said he's excited and honored to have the chance to carry on Dave's legacy and to uphold the quality and consistency of the whiskey. So far, it looks to be a good fit. After all, music is in Dietrich's blood. I actually met him years ago at a little dinner party that Stranahan's threw on the stage at the fabled Red Rocks Amphitheater, which has hosted the likes of the Beatles, Jimi Hendrix, Metallica, and yes, in excess. Dietrich was over the moon that night at Red Rocks, and understandably so. After his stint in the Army, he spent 10 years working in the music business. Loved every minute of it. Indeed, he was ready to spend the rest of his career in the music industry, but then he fell hard for whiskey. And as many of you know, she's one hell of a seductive mistress. He told me this was the culmination of all his experiences in life. His music background, his distilling background, his passion for creating art. He said the band has entrusted him with something special. The whiskey means a lot to them and their fans, and it certainly meant a lot to Dave Pickerel, too. So through hard work, determination, and abundance of talent, Rob Dietrich has earned the right to be Blacken's new frontman, and I, for one, am hoping he hits all the right notes. So here now is a chat I had with Rob very recently at a whiskey festival in Kentucky. It's always a joy for me to talk to the cool people in our industry. And you know what? Let's face it. Most people in our industry are cool. But not everybody's as cool as the guy sitting with me right now, nor is the brand that he makes whiskey for. It's Rob Dietrich of Blackened Whiskey. How are you, brother?
Doing good, man. I am excited to be here. Always good to see you.
Always cool to hang out with you, man. We did some stuff in Denver not long ago. Probably going to be doing some more stuff in Denver. You were shooting bottles of whiskey and riding around in a motorcycle with a sidecar on it, which was pretty awesome. Now, Rob, for those people that don't know who you are, you are the master distiller for Blackened Whiskey, which is a whiskey that was started by Metallica.
Yeah, started by Dave Pickerel and Metallica. So, you know, for those of you guys who are knowledgeable in the whiskey arena, he's a legendary craft distiller, no longer with us. He passed away last year very suddenly, a huge loss to our distilling community. So I was fortunate enough to take up the mantle and work with Metallica on this amazing collaboration.
Yeah, and and we've talked about this before too, but it's like you had to come in, and it's not like you're trying to fill the shoes, but obviously there was a legacy there that Dave had, and you've come in, and I got to be honest, man, it hasn't missed a beat. It's, you know, like no one expected that it would, I don't think, but I mean, it's the whiskey's amazing. I'm a big fan. I like to sip it when I'm at home and when I'm hanging out with you.
Yeah.
So you were at Stranahan's Whiskey for a long time. That's kind of where you cut your teeth.
Absolutely, yeah.
And you are from Montrose, Colorado, which is, you were kind of described yourself as a bit of a geek when you were a kid.
Yeah.
Growing up in Montrose, which is in the mountains, man. That's it. That's not big city.
No, it's definitely an agriculture community. I was also, you know, I was kind of a geek growing up because, you know, we didn't have TV growing up, so I read, you know, voraciously. I always had like three or four books going at a time, and so I was kind of punching outside my weight, you know, with when it came to reading and just you know, chewing up books. So I was always interested in just learning, and then I discovered punk music, and that just, you know, that switched. Yeah. So then I became, you know, one of the only punk kids in an agricultural community. So, you know, I got used to the cowboys kicking my ass.
I was
going to
say, get the shit kicked out of you. I
got used to that.
And then you worked in the music industry for about 10 years.
Yeah.
And we're going all over the place. And I remember a couple of years back when you were at Stranahan's, we had you, the brand, threw a dinner on the stage at Red Rocks.
Yeah, that was epic. That was so epic.
And what was really amazing was, you know, I think most people that were there felt very lucky and privileged to be there. Anybody that's a fan of music knows that Red Rocks is one of the world's great music venues. But I remember looking over at you at one point, and you just had this look of someone who, you know, I was ready to walk up and maybe pinch you a little bit because
yeah.
You seem to be, it was like, wow, man, here I am. I've got a dinner. Everybody's drinking my whiskey. We're on stage at Red Rocks. You found a way to combine the two things that you love, making whiskey and music.
Yeah.
And that's what's incredible about, and while you and me and everybody out there wishes it didn't happen for the reasons
of
that
course.
It happened with Dave passing away, I can't. When I got word that you were take on the responsibility there as master distiller at Blackened, it was like, of course. I didn't That's think awesome. Of it at first, but then as soon as they said your name, I'm like, of course it has to be Rob. I mean, you, because now you're still, it's like, now you got Metallica and the guys are really involved, right?
Absolutely, man. They got their fingerprints all over the process, you know, especially when they were working with Dave, you know, to create the collaboration. You know, they're working on that Sonic, you know, the Black Noise Sonic Enhancement. That's a full collaboration between, you know, their musical skills and Dave's whiskey skills. And for me, I couldn't be more in my wheelhouse. You know, like when I heard about this whole thing, that was my first question, was like, all right, I want to know about this Sonic Enhancement. I want to know about this Black Noise thing. How does this work? Does it work? And I was so blown away about, one, the science behind it and how it does work, and just how much fun, you know, the band has had to be able to tie into it.
Well, and just so you know out there listening, I don't want to just to, so people are going, what is this? So basically, they make the whiskey, and then it undergoes a very unusual process during the aging period, which Rob has referred to as Sonic Enhancement, or what was the other term you were saying?
Black Noise.
Black
That's
noise.
The trademark.
So
yeah.
Tell the people what exactly is going on here, and then I'll attest to how this works after you tell the technical part of how that works.
Well, you know, first we strap the barrels to giant tortoises. In all seriousness, it's pretty extraordinary. You know, anytime you're messing with something that's as legendary and tradition and seeped in tradition as making whiskey, anytime you start doing anything that's outside the norm, you know, you're going to get a lot of people looking at you. You're going to get a lot of people wanting to kick you in the shins and say, you know, that you can't do that to whiskey. It's like, well, you know, it's a modern era, man. You can do anything with whiskey, and that's where, you know, Dave was fond of looking at this project and saying, you know, you got to think outside the box. As a matter of fact, there is no box. You know, forget the box. And that's exactly the way I love this approach. And, you know, with the Black Noise method, you know, that system is taking music, and obviously Metallica music, and playing it at such a low hertz that it's vibrating the barrels. It's vibrating the whiskey so violently that it's penetrating further into the barrel, you know. So you're going past that beautiful line of caramelized sugar, that, you know, those vanillins and tannins that are in the char. You're going past that. You know, I mean, we're going beyond. We're going to the forbidden zone. And
those sonic waves are actually having an impact on the flavor of the whiskey.
They are. We had a control barrel that of the finished whiskey. And that had not had sonic enhancement to it with the Black Noise. Then we had the control barrel that had the sonic enhancement. It was a mind-blowing, just the color difference, just visually. Right away, you can see a color change. On the secondary level, there was a definitive flavor change. You know, it's going past that red line and into the beyond. You know, we're going Star Trek style with this thing.
It really is incredible, and I've told this story before, and people on the show probably heard it, but I was one of the first people to try it with Dave at Tales of the Cocktail down in New Orleans, and exactly what Rob described. He said these are two whiskeys that were made the exact same way, except one underwent this sonic enhancement,
yeah,
and the other one went another one, different playlists, different...
Yeah.
And I looked at Dave, and I would say I was skeptical, okay?
I was skeptical the first time, too. I mean, that's why I ask questions. I'm a whiskey nerd, so I'm going to ask all those questions.
It was so true. I tried it, and I was blown away. I couldn't believe that was the only difference. And he was on to something, and I know Dave was super excited about it. And it's got to be not only a thrill, but also it's got to be, I guess, a bit of a daunting challenge for you to be able to carry this on.
And certainly, you know,
nobody's doing this.
Yeah, you know, it's you know, when I first got approached by somebody from the Blackened team, the first thing I'm thinking was like, yeah, no pressure.
Yeah,
it's only the legacy of Dave Pickerel and Metallica, you know, so two heavy hitters. But you know, man, the only way you grow, as a human being in any capacity, is just you got to step outside your comfort zone, and you got to run straight towards it. You know.
Well, you don't. Look, man, and just people out there, so you know, I think one of the privileges of getting to do what I do is that I meet a lot of people, not only that are distillers but winemakers, and there's nothing that I would describe as normal, okay?
Yeah, well, yeah.
The people that do this are artists. They're creative people, and therefore they tend to be quirky, and they tend to, but
Thank God for the weirdos, man.
Right? Thank
God. When the going gets weird, then weird turn pro.
But the other part about it is, for the most part, everybody you meet is the genuine article, because there really isn't a lot of room for bullshit in this business. Like, you just can't bullshit your way through it. You either... And Rob is one of those guys that... is, you know, it's not like, hey man, I'm working at a hipster distillery and I should probably take up, you know, shooting, or maybe I should get a motorcycle, or get, like, you're it, man.
That's you, just how
you,
I live.
You lived the life, and not only did you live the life in the music industry and whiskey, so you were in the service, you were in Somalia when shit was going down there. Yep. Like, you, everything you've done, you've committed to it and you've seen it through, and I'm you know, I'd be honest, man, like, I think it's just very admirable the way that you carry yourself and the way you took on this challenge with this whiskey, and knowing that Dave, the shadow of Dave, is looming large, and it still is.
Oh yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
I'm looking over there. There's a blackened poster right now, and Dave's still on that poster.
He's in
right?
the center, man. He's
in
right
the center
in the center between Metallica,
between Lars and Jay, you know, between the band. And the fact that you were not only not afraid to do that, but you came in and, like you do everything else, balls to the wall, and you're killing it. And Blackened is, just going to continue to go and go and go. And
unto the breach once more, man.
And I'm looking forward to, because eventually we're going to start seeing some things down the line that are going to be you getting to have some fun and getting in there. And I'm looking forward to seeing what you have on tap for the brand.
I am as well, man. You know, the biggest thing for me is certainly, you know, honoring and upholding that legacy of Dave. You know, that's it. That's to me so important. But also, I've had a lot of people coming up to me and, you know, say, hey, you got some big shoes to fill. I was like, I'm not going to fill those shoes. Those are Dave's shoes. That's a legacy that man created. And I'm honored to, you know, continue to uphold that. I brought my own shoes. You know, I'm going to dance. I dance in my own tune. I'm going to be bringing some new innovations in and still honoring that legacy that Dave has created. And to me, you know, being able to do both of those things is and work with such an epic and legendary band. I couldn't be happier, man. I'm living my dream within my dream.
Fantastic, man. And I want to raise a shot here. Let's have a little bit of black.
Yeah.
And Rob, hold on. Let me go.
Hello, beautiful.
That tastes good. And with that, I want to thank Rob Dietrich from Blackened. Check him out on the social medias. It's out there. What do you got?
Whiskey Rob and
Whiskey
on the Instagram.
Rob. And then, of course, Blackened. Go try it. Rob, always great to see you,
brother. Dan, it's good to see you, brother. We'll get you out in that motorcycle in Colorado soon.
I can't wait. Let's do it in January.
Oh, yeah, January.
I'll get in that sidecar.
I'll put a buffalo hide on you and throw you in the sidecar. we'll head up the hill.
All right, brother.
All right, man.
Talk soon, man.
Take care, brother.
Bye.
I gotta stop that right now. I'll get too fired up. And it is the end of the show. I gotta calm down. That was a lot of fun. I want to thank Alex Ebert. I want to thank Rob Dietrich. I want to thank you for joining me on this episode of What We're Drinking. We got a bunch of good ones coming up in the next couple of weeks. I got Florida, Georgia Line. I've got some big time distillers. I got Eddie Russell, Hall of Fame distiller of Wild Turkey. I got Amethyst Kia. I got Pearl. We got so many bands coming and other people. It's going to be a lot of fun. I invite you to go and follow me on Instagram and Twitter at The Imbiber. That's TheImbiber. And I don't know. What else is there? Is there anything? Nothing else matters?